The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larson, Judge Smith, Judge Kirk, the Honorable Elise L. Larson presiding.
Good morning, counsel, and welcome to the Court of Appeals. For the audio record, today is September 22nd, 2022, and this hearing is being held via Zoom.gov. An audio recording of today's hearing will be available on the court's website. Today, we have four oral cases on the agenda. I would observe to the attorneys that the time clock should be visible to you if you use the gallery view option on Zoom. And I would remind the attorneys to please mute your microphones when you are not speaking. With that, I will call today's first case. That case number is A22-0708 in the matter of the welfare of the child of ARJ and BJJ. Good morning, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor.
You will each be given 15 minutes for argument today. Appellants, you will have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal. For both of you, before beginning your argument, if you could please identify yourself and your clients for the audio record. With that, counsel, are you ready to begin?
I am.
Great.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Miles Ringsred. I'm the attorney for appellant in this matter. An appellant is here appealing the decision of the district court denying her petition for reestablishment of the legal parent-child relationship under Minnesota Statute 260C.329. This matter really began back in 2016 when appellant rightfully requested temporary assistance from respondent after her family found themselves in a tricky situation. And rather than providing the requested temporary assistance, St. Louis County began, as is aptly described in Santosky v. Kramer, they began to shape the historical events that formed the basis for the termination. This request for temporary assistance ultimately led to respondents seeking to terminate appellant's parental rights. The trial, which was fraught by mistakes by the court and illegal inducements by respondents, took place on January 18th. And admittedly, as Mr. Stromberg said in opening statements during this trial, this was no typical case because appellant worked the reunification plan and did everything that was asked of them. The trial only heard testimony from several witnesses until it broke for lunch, at which point appellant was duped into voluntarily terminating her parental rights by illegal inducements by respondents of a contract agreement, and in order to keep the door open for exactly the opportunity that they are petitioning for now.
Counsel, how can you prove that she was duped?
The transcript. There was very clearly a contact agreement, which is an unenforceable agreement in this situation. And really trying to go not get into the weeds in this, this is kind of laying the groundwork for some of the issues that are much more present in the actual petition. This related to...
Well, why are you even giving us this background? Aren't we really here about their petition to restore?
Yes, because if I might continue, it has to do with the order that led, that was void of certain things that very much relates to the issues at hand.
So, counsel, as we turn to that, I'd like to ask you some framing questions.
Sure.
I understand your argument to be, well, this is what I want to understand for sure about your argument. I mean, I think at bottom, your argument is that the order that granted a voluntary termination of parental rights didn't describe the good cause, that the underlying affidavit, which your client submitted in order to prove up good cause, which was her burden, does not describe the good cause. And that therefore you're arguing that now there should be, now she's entitled to reestablishment. And that, this is what I want to understand about your argument. Are you arguing that 260C 3.329, the reestablishment of the parent-child relationship, does not apply ever to voluntary termination of parental rights?
That I think that would have to be on a case-by-case basis. I think in as Your Honor pointed out, the district court failing to put in the good cause for the voluntary termination is one of the factors that made it very difficult in this situation for appellant to be able to establish the
Right. I understand your argument. I'm trying to frame it a little bit. Let's take a different case. So I want to make sure that we are responding to and analyzing the arguments that you're in fact making. So let's take a different case. Let's take a different case where a parent puts in good cause, establishes physical, emotional inability to care for a child, financial, et cetera, establishes it. The district court says, yes, here's the good cause, et cetera. Does 0.329 apply to that situation of a voluntary termination of parental rights when good cause is established and documented?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not a question that facially that this statute simply never applies to a voluntary termination of parental rights, okay? Right?
Yes.
Okay, and then in the hypothetical situation I set up, even the subparagraphs, the contents that are the focus of today's case, I think, are in that the petition has to assert, or that first of all, it may be granted if the parent has corrected the conditions that led to an order, and then the petition has to include the steps the parent has taken toward personal rehabilitation and how the petitioner has corrected. In the hypothetical case that I described, would those apply? Or are you arguing those will never apply to a voluntary termination of parental rights?
That, I would say, would not apply in the voluntary situation because, as the thought process goes, right here, the first issue is we start with the assertion that appellant's voluntary termination carries no admission, presumption, nor adjudication of unfitness. So how do we square those facts with rehabilitation and correcting conditions?
So let me ask you that. So your argument then is it isn't a matter of statutory interpretation, that we should conclude that subparagraphs 6 and 7 do not ever apply to a voluntary termination of parental rights. But why? It doesn't use the word unfitness. In my hypothetical situation, if someone had problems, why that were good cause, why couldn't they demonstrate personal rehabilitation of whatever was the good cause, the condition, the good cause conditions? Why would that not be appropriate or even doable?
That is where we get to. So if there was good cause shown, if there were, that would, again, essentially what we're left with in this case is there are no adjudicated facts showing good cause or anything to lay the foundation for appellant to be able to use as the foundation for establishing these things. So
in your case, it seems to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, it's maybe less a question of statutory interpretation generically. It's more a question that you think that this statute applied to the specific circumstances of your case as applied deprives your client of due process. Is that fair?
At this point, trying to think of what, so without a good cause analysis, that's one area that could give the foundation for some sort of establishing rehabilitation or correcting conditions. If the trial actually took place and there were other adjudicated facts, we could find those there. But our assertion that we have to somehow, that the reestablishment statute and the voluntary termination statute must be read in harmony with one another. And because we don't have either adjudicated facts or any determination of the good cause shown for a voluntary termination in this case, it's without admitting and due process issues, my client is unable to meet those elements.
And the concern, I think, is, or the question is, you know, the burden was on, is on the parent to support a voluntary termination of parental rights. Then an order is issued, and then the parent could appeal that order. I think the question is, if the parent did not appeal the termination order, and your client, I don't think, did, isn't it effectively, I mean, it's final, and now it, in this other context, aren't you asking to unwind, essentially, or to challenge a challenge that was, or to assert the challenge that was not made at the time, which would be there was no, that the order was insufficient to support a good cause termination, voluntary termination?
I think it would be hard to say that they've waived, or that any sort of, that a statute of limitations is, has prevented them from doing that appealing at that time, because the reestablishment statute requires that they wait 4 years. They can't foresee this issue at that time. It's not like they necessarily foresaw the fact that a good cause, the absence of the good cause in the TPR order, would somehow make and confound this issue when 4 years later, when they try to reestablish parental rights.
But why at this point, if there was not a challenge to the basis, to the termination itself? I mean, I think the relief you're asking from us is that, as I read your brief, that reestablishment be granted. Whereas it seems like, or alternatively sent to the district court for proceedings, I guess the proceedings would be to determine whether there was in fact good cause to terminate, which then gets us into the failure to actually appeal the good cause termination back when.
No, I think what we would be asking more for is, I mean, we could ask the court to use its inherent power to, again, rectify a mistake that was made a long time ago. But essentially, what we're left with now, and it kind of gets to the heart of respondents' standard of review question, there have been 4 years that have transpired between the TPR and when the petition was filed. And so if we're going to be talking about reestablishing and correcting conditions, we're talking about things that have happened after they were in front of the court. And so giving them at least the opportunity to have an evidentiary hearing to establish these. And it's hard to know what to establish at this point, because one, the court failed to do that. The court in the present order didn't say what the conditions were, what needed to be rehabilitated. The respondent didn't oppose any of the lengthy, I mean, half of the petition was in the alternative, identifying, having to go through the record, trying to identify allegations that could possibly be the foundation for establishing these criteria, and went very, very thoroughly through those. And the appellant really just needs the opportunity for an evidentiary hearing for the court to consider whether she has rehabilitated or corrected these conditions. There's no other way for the court to do that, to see what happened and what has transpired within these last 4 years that should give the court the belief that these parents should be able to reestablish their parental rights.
I get, my question, counsel, is why the appropriate mechanism isn't first to file a motion to correct the underlying judgment. Wouldn't that resolve the issue that you're presenting here, that you don't, your clients don't know what information they need to show that they've rehabilitated?
Well, we sort of did with a motion to void and vacate. We brought that up with them, trying to bring that up, just kind of saying, look at all these issues with it. We brought it up, I mean, from the inducements of a contract agreement, from the court's mistakenly not allowing the revoke her consent from not having the good cause shown. We asked for that in the motion to void and vacate. That was dismissed, and that was not that was dismissed also by this court as not being timely. And so that has been in front of that court. And so it still isn't. It would at least give some of the conditions and the causes.
But there's a difference between voiding a judgment and correcting a mistake in the judgment under the law, correct?
Correct.
And so I guess my question is, you're asking us to find that the statute is applied to this circumstance violates due process. And I'm asking you if there is still a process that you could use to avoid the constitutional tension here.
I think it would also be very difficult to do so it's been over 4 years. The judge that presided over the case has retired, and a new judge is in front of this matter who is not familiar with the proceedings as much as she has been able to review the record. So I would say that it would be an ineffective way at this point to try to establish conditions. Ultimately, what it would have to come down to is the county would have to allege these things. We would have to start trying this matter in terms of how things have changed within the last 4 years. I see my time is going to be up, so I'll wait for my rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. You will have opportunity for 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Stromberg, are you prepared to begin?
I am, Your Honor. Thank you very much. My name is Benjamin Stromberg. I'm an assistant St. Louis County attorney here on behalf of the respondent, St. Louis County Public Health and Human Services Department. I'll start, I think, where counsel left off with the constitutional piece. And first, as noted in my brief, I don't see any evidence that this matter was notice was provided to the Attorney General's office as required by Rule 144. So I don't think
I don't think that's required for an as-applied constitutional.
Uncertain. I will defer to the court on that. I did want to make sure to raise that issue. In any event, I would note that counsel cites five cases in his brief to support the idea that this statute is unconstitutional. And I think it's important to note that while all five of those cases involved constitutional challenges to statutes, not a single one involved a court overturning a statute. Or in four of the five cases, the court has expressly found the statute at issue to be constitutional. And in the fifth case, a federal case, the court declined to reach the issue. So
in this case, counsel, what's wrong with the argument when you look at the affidavit that supported the petition for voluntary termination, and then you look at the order granting it? It doesn't describe, neither describes the good cause. Right. What's wrong with the argument that to apply this statute now would deprive the person whose parental rights have been terminated from an opportunity to reestablish if there's no process for doing so?
Well, I think, first of all, Your Honor, the time to argue that was in 2018. You know, the court has placed very strict guidelines on when these cases can be appealed, and that didn't happen here. I don't know why it didn't happen here, but it didn't. And in bringing this case back, I think it's important to note that the appellant filed not just this petition for reestablishment, but a petition to vacate the TPR back from 2018. In support of those two petitions, or a one petition, one motion, were 600 pages of documentation, virtually every single one of which was an argument as to why the court was wrong in 2018. And you know, that ship has sailed. It's just not before the court now. And I would note, not only was that in 2018, but the appellant in this case has filed at least five motions to vacate that order subsequently. Yet here we are, 4.5 years later, and it's the first time this court has had occasion to review this matter.
But counsel, I mean, it seems to me like you don't disagree that there's a problem with the original judgment in this case. And I guess my question to you is whether you think there is an appropriate procedure for correcting this judgment to have a good cause finding, because it seems to me that the argument that appellant is making is, without any findings of good cause, how can we prove rehabilitation?
Well, I back to the court, I think the initial question, I do disagree. I don't see a problem with this underlying order. And if there is a problem, I think, effectively we're dealing with an equitable argument here. And I think that warrants an equitable response, which is latches. You can't slumber in your rights for years and then go back and correct it. Because I think the problem with answering the question in the affirmative would be to say, so what happens if we do that? Okay, we go back, we correct that order. If it needs correcting, which of course I don't think it does, the court corrects that order, that gets appealed. This court says, there wasn't good cause here. We're going to overturn that. Okay. Well, we have two kids at issue in that case, one of whom has been adopted years ago, has parents whose name are on his birth certificate, has not seen the appellant in quite some time, has a home fully integrated into. So where does that get us then? Do we say this transcript, clerical issue, that the fact that all the boxes might not have been correctly checked, we're then going to just try to wind the clock back 4 years ago and take a now 9-year-old who was 5 when he went to this home and relitigate this matter? And I think the court's child protection jurisprudence is unequivocal that's not okay. That can't be how this works. So
you disagree with appellants that if they had challenged this order procedurally, that their argument that the district court needed to state the reasons, the good cause reasons in the order, that they would have been successful in that challenge?
I don't know that I agree or disagree. I didn't have the opportunity to brief it. I didn't have the opportunity to research it or argue it. So I certainly don't want to waive any argument. It's quite possible that it would have been remanded at that point, and we would have picked up our trial where we left off. But that's not why we're here. There were 600 pages of documentation specifically as to that issue. This court has already said that the appellant can't appeal that issue, that the time to appeal that was lapsed long ago. So we're strictly here on the petition for reestablishment of parental rights.
So with that in mind, with the underlying decisions that we have in this case and saying that's not appealable, what do you, under the statute, the prongs that are being challenged by appellant, what is the type of evidence that you think in a voluntary TPR would meet those standards in the absence of good cause findings in the underlying order?
Well, I think there's a practicality component here, okay? None of us are who we were 4 years ago. So you put in your petition what I have done in 4 years to make myself a better parent, to put myself in a position to make this work. What I think you don't do is you don't say, I don't like this statute, therefore I'm going to ignore it. But that's what counsel did here. That's what the appellant did. I just don't think this should apply to me, so I'm not even going to bother to try. And effectively what's being requested is, that the legislature got it wrong, so let's ignore it. Let's just have this panel rewrite this statute since the district court declined to do so. Well, of course the district court declined to do so. That's not their job. And I would respectfully submit that it's not this court's job either. That is, if that's an issue, that's a legislative issue. We also know that the legislature is perfectly capable of distinguishing when the distinction between a voluntary and an involuntary termination of parental rights matters. And they didn't do it here. And that's because I would assume they didn't want to. And so there is no distinction. Ultimately, what the argument appellant is putting forth here is that that she is entitled to a presumption of parental fitness, but she's not a parent. And when that fact goes away, the entire argument falls apart. As to these two children, she's not their parent anymore. And that sounds harsh, and it is, but it's also the legal fact, and it's really not disputed. So there is no presumption to apply here. She had a burden to prove, and she didn't even try to do it. She just said, there's 9 provisions I need to meet. I only feel like meeting 6. And somehow the district court erred in concluding that. So, and that's just not, again, the appellant didn't carry her burden at the district court, and she hasn't carried it now. Other points I think to raise that didn't get addressed in opening remarks is ancillary to the petition to reestablish. There is a motion before the court to order visitation with the two children that has been appealed. And I want to point out,
before we move there, counsel, could you comment on the standard of review issue and what you think the appropriate standard is? It seems that both you and appellant agree that that we haven't stated what the standard is when reviewing these. And could you just briefly comment on how you think we should decide that issue?
Absolutely. I think that there's no question. It wasn't for lack of trying, as I called all my colleagues around the state to find someone who's had one of these, and I couldn't. So here we are. And in short, I think the standard for a petition to reestablish parental rights should be the same standard of review that's applied to terminating parental rights in the first place. Did the court abuse its discretion as to the ultimate determination? Did it properly find the facts? Obviously, any sort of legal conclusions by the district court would need to be reviewed de novo. As would always be the case, but it just seems inherent to me that the standard should be the same as it is for terminating parental rights. I think as a somewhat fallback position to that, I do think I would acknowledge that the argument asserted in the appellant's brief, where treating this as analogous to a motion to order adoptive placement under 260C, I believe it's 609, makes, that there's some logic there as well. And I think both of us, flesh that out in our briefs, and I can certainly speak more to it, but the short answer to the question is, the standard should be applied the same as it is to taking away, to putting those parental rights back should be the same as it was to taking it away in the first place.
In a situation where, as here, there was no evidentiary hearing because the district court decided on the face of the petition that it was inadequate, how does that square with the standard you're describing, the same standard as for a TPR order?
Well, I think, again, to the extent that the district court made legal conclusions, I think this court can review those conclusions de novo, and it is different from a motion to order adoptive placement in that we have a lengthy record before the court, and the district court in this case expressly noted that it reviewed the entirety of the record prior to issuing this order, and that record runs 3,000 pages. It's a good question, and to be perfectly honest, it's one I've wrestled with, because I don't know even know how we really get to the standard of review under these facts of this case, because not only did the petition fail on its face, there's not even any argument put forth that it doesn't. It's just that it shouldn't have to meet the legal requirements. So did the district court abuse its discretion when it's found that the appellant's petition to reestablish didn't satisfy the statutory criteria, and therefore no evidentiary hearing was granted? And I think it's pretty clear that the court was right as to that issue. Quickly, as to visitation, I note that The request includes a request that the appellant be granted visitation to the child NJ. That child was adopted in, I believe, 2019. That child is not before the jurisdiction of the district court in any way, shape, or form. That child's parents have no notice of this pending visitation. Yet what's being requested here is that this court grant its inherent authority, ironically, under the guise of the best interests of the child, to order visits with someone that he has had no contact with, and again, with no notice to his parents. It's frankly an absurd argument. The district court obviously didn't err in denying it. If the court would indulge me for a moment, I note that the page 5 of the reply brief in this matter, it flat out accuses me of lying to induce a voluntary termination in this case. And that it is just flat out false. It is completely unsupported by the record, and the statement, frankly, has no place in a brief. The simple fact is, as is reflected in the record, the appellant did have contact with these kids post-termination. Okay, that contact with NJ stopped after multiple accusations that the foster parent was abusing him. Law enforcement responded to the home. Law enforcement had him remove his clothing to prove that he wasn't being abused. They apologized subsequently. The other children in the home were traumatized by this. So is it a surprise that those foster parents at that point no longer wanted to enter into a binding communication and a contact agreement with someone who falsely accused them of child abuse? It's not a surprise. As to the child LJ, and just for the court's reference, documents 77, 113, and 205 in the record bear this out. With regard to LJ, the supervised visits were monthly for about a year at least before they were terminated. And that happened because appellant was doing things like calling the child's doctor, attempting to change his medications, even though she was no longer his legal parent. Many concerns regarding her just complete lack of insight regarding what happened here. And lack of understanding, and frankly, her personally, federal lawsuits against both sets of foster parents as well as medical providers, which of course were meritless and went nowhere. They went to the Supreme Court, but they went nowhere on the merits. And so I think the whole premise that there was no contact is simply and categorically false. The district court knew that, and I did want this court to know that as well. My time is up, and I apologize for going over.
No, thank you, counsel. Mr. Ringsred, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd just like to quickly touch on a couple of things that were brought up. It sort of came down to the respondent made a point, and so did the district court, about the numerous cases that appellant filed after the TPR. These were all done pro se. These were not to reestablish. They were not reestablishment petitions. They were all completely. They were all very, very different, and really speak to more of her dedication to her kids and the fact that she really didn't understand what she was doing during those TPR petitions or during the TPR hearings when she voluntarily terminated her parental rights. And then they really bring up a lot and try to hammer at, oh, well, the kids have been adopted or haven't seen these parents for so many years. But I really wish they had the same concern when as they do from removing from adoption or from these situations as they did when they actually terminated the parental rights. And then perhaps we would not be finding ourselves in these situations. But one of the main things that respondent brought up was that we did not establish those two elements, that she had rehabilitated herself and that she had corrected the conditions, and so did the district court. And that I don't know how they can make that argument, because in both the petition itself, we have 40 pages. Half of our petition is in the alternative, establishing those criteria, going through, having to go through the record and find all of these allegations that could potentially be the foundation for her to establish this. We went through.
And counsel, what was in the petition that showed what steps however you want to call it, rehabilitation, correcting conditions, whatever, what steps your client took since the time of the order terminating parental rights. So since the time of the order, what steps she took to improve her ability to parent the child?
There were talked about stability in housing. They have a home, they have a vehicle. They have both been gainfully employed continuously throughout this. They have gone to classes. They have gone to parenting classes.
Is that the case, the classes since the time of the order terminating parental rights?
Yes, I believe so.
Not
believe
before that. The order?
Not before and after the order.
I so believe after the order, there were parenting classes and other?
Yes. And okay. And talking to about professionals, about educational needs, and just generally preparing for their setting up bedrooms and just being ready for children to be back. Part of the hardship of this is these parents don't have much to rehabilitate. It's part of what harkens back. And I know I don't want to get bogged down to 2018 stuff, but they voluntarily did this. And if there wasn't much to rehabilitate, how do we even address that? We did go through, and them saying that we didn't is just not correct.
I think the problem is that there was no appeal of that. Is that correct? The TPR order. Was there an appeal of the TPR order?
There was no appeal of the TPR order.
Even though at the time, I think your client, even at the time, disagreed with it, right? Because she actually sought to revoke her consent before the order issued. Is that correct?
Yes, she had an attorney who convinced her not to appeal, who, again, her revocation should have just happened. It automatically happens when that. But she was convinced by her attorney not to do it, had to find new attorneys, and then the relationship fell apart. And then she was just desperate to try to find some sort of remedy to the problem that she had. And yeah, she did not appeal that. But again, when it comes to the petition before us, it is hard to prove rehabilitation when there's not much to rehabilitate, but also the petition is replete with evidence and affidavits talking about what the parents have done to correct these conditions. So any assertion that we didn't is just patently untrue. He then said quickly to the standard of review, I think we're somewhat in agreement, but essentially we can't just give all of the discretion to the district court because, again, the parents for the last 4 years have not been in front of this court. They need to weigh this evidence, and without some sort of an evidentiary hearing, that can't take place. And so it would be the standard of review should be somewhat aligned with trying to dismiss on the pleadings or a motion for just summary judgment standard. And I see I have gone over time, but does anyone have any final questions?
No, thank you, counsel. Mm-hmm. This case has been submitted, and we will issue an opinion in this matter within the time prescribed by statute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honors.